And you've told me in a number of interviews, and I think everybody will relate to this, once you have the systems built, it goes pretty quickly.
It's supposed to.
But this is an XP82, yeah. So yeah. Here we are.
This is your downlock spring. Here's your part of your landing gear retract. These are the fuel pumps right here. They're all sent off for overhaul. And these are the fuel shutoffs. None of those existed anywhere in the world, I was told. If I had one that could be rebuilt, those have been underwater for years. If any of them could be rebuilt, they were $2,200 each. And the fellow there said, well, can you find me any cores? They don't exist. They've been gone for years. Here are 10 brand new ones, ET Supply, $12 each, brand new. We had took them apart, re-greased the bearings, had them sent out for tags.
We have about 4 minutes left, Tom, for okay. Just the XP82. So you scroll through the slides. But what I want people to appreciate is something that I learned from you a long time ago. And I think it was you that said this. You said you can find any part you need in the world.
That's true.
Give them that, because there might be some folks out here working on a very challenging restoration for themselves. What's the advice in that regard?
There's a lot of the stuff that shows up in flea markets. If you see a World War II airplane part in there, and you can obviously see they're World War II airplane by the rivets and by the colors they are, see what the prefix number is. My business cards will be right down here. You call me with the prefix number, I'll tell you what it fits. You know, a 73 is a Mustang, you know, a 117 is a XP82, 120 is a regular 82. It just goes on and on. You can identify any World War II part by its prefix number.
How many of you would like to work in the Warbird business or have an interest in restoration? We have a lot of young folks here. Let me tell you this, and I mean this with all sincerity. If you show up on this guy's door and you have an interest in this, Tom Riley, I don't know how many people over the years you've given a start to. I mean, it's countless. I'm thinking of names right now that just I know. But you've been very generous to the community, and you continue to be, and I thank you for that.
Thank you. How many people have I taught?
You've taught a lot. Yeah. I know that.
Quite a few.
My favorite Tom Riley story in closing here is the way he discovered Warbirds. And you can tell this in about 30 seconds.
I was a skydiving instructor in Kissimmee, Florida, flying a 150 Cessna. Didn't even know Mustangs or World War II airplanes existed. A D-model Mustang taxied in, popping and cracking and fire coming out of the exhaust, said, take me for a ride. Straight up, straight down, 400 miles an hour, upside down across the ground. Next day, I was in the World War II airplane restoration business.
And here you are with this XP-82. Yeah.
Here's a part of the leading edge that hit the ground in Alaska so hard and making the new gun port, so they are finished. I'm going to run. There's the 8-gun. I was looking for this picture. There's the 8-gun pod shooting the 850s and the 6 center section mounted. Each gun, 700 rounds a minute. Look at the amount of brass that's piled up underneath the wing. Right there. Here's the doghouses, belly scoops. Here's the wings starting to go together. I'll flash through it quick. The wings going together. There's the fuel tanks. And here's new wing attach angles, aileron controls. The man that built all these parts is sitting right there.
Right down front.
There Raise we your are. Hand, John.
There he is.
Right there. Aileron controls. There's the outboard wings going together. Here's the fuselages and wings going on, pushing the fuel tanks in, new glass in the canopies. There's another magical thing. We found a windshield off of a J model Mustang that only fit a J model Mustang. Only two of them were ever built. I was able to trade all the controls in the left-hand fuselage for that canopy that I found buried at Zaplata's house. So we're almost through here. Here's the engines being hung right here, making the cowlings through the bottom, a lot of the press dies, carb air temperature motors, the gear door up locks, carburetor scoops, the dish pans for the glare shields, instrument panels, doing the wiring and the electrical work.
And you just buy all of this stuff at the XP82 store.
Yeah, sure.
Which mail orders, so it's... There's it's wonderful to see that.
Here's the tail section parts that man right there made. And here's the crash tail came out of the crash. Hmm. And here's the overhauled tail. We're almost to the end here now. We had to press a lot of our parts. And this is the exhaust fairings for the cowls. And right here, the cowl's being made. There's the press machine, press dies. And the outside engine cowls, here's the dish pans, firewall floor. We can put all the original radios back in it again. And put them all the wiring. Here are the radiators built by Martin Radiator. Here are the oil heat exchangers built by that man right there. And here's some of the welding on the coolant tubes.
And there's the props. Those props were built by MT Propeller.
MT Propeller, wonderful propellers. They're smooth as velvet. They work wonderfully. We have not flown the airplane yet. We'll probably fly the airplane next week for the first time.
It better be on a Thursday.
I hope so.
For years, Tom has said, well, you know, when's it going to be finished? When's it going to be finished? On a Thursday.
This is Colonel Thacker. He flew an XP. He flew a B model 82 with Merlin engines from Hawaii to LaGuardia Airport, 14 and a half hours. He's 99 years old in that picture, standing with me. He was there about a year ago. He's still living today. He came to see our airplane. Here's the airplane outside. The first day it ran, there's the engines running. There's the inside when we got it. It sat outside for 56 years. There's the inside together, right there. The coolant tubes. Here's the ADF loop. Even found the original ADF loop that goes behind the pilot side. That's how the Japanese found Pearl Harbor.
You're thinking you're going to have the airplane here next year is the hope.
Hopefully.
All right.
No doubt about it.
You keep scrolling through the slides. I want to bring out Stu Dawson, and I want to bring out Zach McNeil now, who are our other two guests tonight for our early Jets discussion. Tom, as we finish this up, keep narrating a little bit while we're waiting on Zach.
There's a wingtip. There's new wingtip skins and new fairings, fitting the fairings right there, and radio package, trim controls inside right there, and gear doors, the press dies of the gear doors.
Come on out, guys. Have a seat.
And we're about done, right there. Here are the brakes.
Look at that. What a one to stop on right there with the brakes. You even put the brakes to stop on this. That's great. I like it. It's a bad joke, Tom. Don't worry about it.
I'm so hard of hearing, I cannot hear him
it's
talk.
All those years in B-25s. But look at that right there. Isn't that gorgeous, folks?
It looks like a model, but there it is, ready to fly.
The XP-82. Give me the... You're going to sit out here with us and talk about vintage jet and the transition. This was one of the last propeller-driven intercepts that we had.
This is the step between propeller-driven airplanes and jets.
Right, and that's here. What we're talking about tonight, in addition to the XP-82. There's a lot of folks that also want to know. Let's just do the count. I'm going to name the airplane, and you tell me how many you've restored. I'm going to name the airplane. You tell me the number you've restored. B-25s, we know 9.
Yeah.
B-17s.
3.
B-24s.
1.
And Mustangs.
None.
But I'm at Tom's hangar one day, and I'm looking in there. He just finished a P-40. And I said, Tom, whose Mustang is that? And Tom Riley says, what Mustang? That Mustang.
He goes, that's a
mini Mustang that a friend of mine had. My Mustang's in my garage at the house. And when you're Tom Riley, you keep a D-model Mustang in your garage, and your wife's car sits outside, right?
That's right.
That's just how you are. Tom, God, thanks for coming out here today.
Thank you.
Now, we're going to jump in on this. Zach McNeil, who flew the Gloucester Meteor just a few minutes ago, and Stu Dawson, who knows an awful lot about vintage jets and flew those one of the Tiger Cats in with the lovely Connie Boland, joins us tonight on this panel. And Zach, I want to start off right away. We all know what happened with your museum director and the founder, the guy that worked so hard to get the Gloucester Meteor here. And we're honored to have you guys here.
Well, thanks for letting us come. And it's great to be at Oshkosh, the biggest air show in the world. On Friday, we lost Marty Tibbetts in an airplane, a Venom, an old de Havilland Venom. It had some issues on takeoff and basically ran out of options. His goal for the past couple years was to get this Meteor to Oshkosh. We bought it 2 years ago from a place in Coventry, England, and getting that airplane moved was an unbelievable process. It's about 24 feet wide. It doesn't have the range to fly it across, so we had to ship it on a railroad container and then reassemble it here and then go through a whole bunch of hurdles since there was nobody in the United States rated to fly it. And not to mention, no one's ever worked on one. In a considerable period of time, no one's worked on a Gloucester or a Meteor in the United States.
When you look at that thing, and I don't know how many of you have seen it up close, but when you look at the front of it, it looks like it has no engines. And that's because these engines were rudimentary. They were very different than what we see today. Talk to us briefly about that, because that's really what sets this thing apart.
Yeah, the Frank Whittle was, the jet power and kind of invented the centrifugal flow engine. In World War II, as you know, the ME-262 was coming along. We were working very hard to come up with the counter for that. The centrifugal flow engine kind of just sits in there, and it has screens around it that act as kind of FOD screens. So when you look into a Meteor, or if you can see inside a T-33 or a MiG-15-17, what you look at is a whole bunch of accessories. Well, that was kind of twofold. It was easy to work on them because they're outside, and you had a lot of airflow around them, so it kept them cool when they're working really hard. Also, since the engine spins the air to the outside, instead of our modern axial flows where they go down the center and compress, the engine had to be a lot wider. So that's why you see in a Meteor those massive nacelles that it sits in.
Bunch of fires in a can versus one.
Like yes, it's a can type burner.
Now, the aircraft that Stu Dawson flew in here, the Tiger Cat, which I think, when you walk by it, you have to smoke a cigarette, one of the sexiest airplanes ever, in my opinion, that thing was right on the crest of jets versus really piston-driven aircraft, kind of like the XP-82. I mean, it's a sleek, sleek aircraft, not a jet, but very, very fast.
Yeah, it is, and they had some problems with it, taking it aboard the boat. And so the Navy said, okay, we'll give it to the Marines. Marines took it and everything. By the time all that happened, World War II was ending up.
It's over, right.
So it really saw its first combat. Next war, here it goes.
Sure.
That's it. So, and it finished up, and in 46 was the last of the ones that were built. And they built 464 of them. I mean, 364 of them.
Well, the Marines loved it, and I just, looking back on it, remember my mom, who's sitting over here, her dad, who was an SBD tail gunner, Coral Sea, Midway, all of that, loved the F-7, and it just used to rave about it because he was a test mechanic and told us around the dinner table a lot of nights about wearing the goggles and flying out over the lake there in Texas when they were really just kind of getting it figured out. They had to fly with night vision. And it did. It flew a lot of night missions, didn't it?
That's what it was used for in Korea. Mostly was the night attack, night fighter, and it could slow down, And they didn't. The jets were good, but they can't slow down with the guys down here and the small stuff on the ground. Where the Tiger Cat can, he can just sit there and launder. Now he's got 420s and 450s, and so he could just stay up there. And you tank the thing, and you can stay up there 6-7 hours.
And I'm going to ask both of you this, and Tom, I would ask you this, but we don't know just yet, officially, on yours. Does it fly as well as it looks?
It's great.
Oh,
It is absolutely great.
I was hoping you weren't going to tell me that. If I ever hit the lottery, I'm going to hire somebody to fly my Tiger Cat just so I can sit out and listen to it. I mean, it's one of those unique airplanes. It's as fun on the ground as it is in the air to watch. What about the Meteor? I mean, how is it in the air?
Meteor's not as much fun as I can imagine the Tiger Cat being. it's got a couple things that you can see just by looking at it with the jet engine so far away from one another. Single engine is not fun in that airplane. And since it's, it is literally the first generation of jets, they hadn't figured out a lot of stuff yet. One of the great examples they give is the wings were originally 5.6 feet longer, but they were ripping off the outboard wing sections. So the solution with their slide rules, we'll just take 5 feet off the edges.